And it's recording. We've got Alexander Drexel sounds a little bit like Hannibal Lecter. That could just be being German, I don't know.
Oh, that's sweet.
Does look like you've either grabbed someone's wig or it's a hamster that you're trying to eat.
It's not a hamster, it's what do you call that, Alex?
Cotton candy.
In the UK we call it candy floss.
Manners.
I'm sure we've all done stuff in the booth that we wish we didn't.
I'm gonna talk about this. I had a job and there was so much downtime that at some point I asked the photographer, because we were all super bored, so I was just like, hey, you wanna take a picture? And he's like, sure, might as well. So he just took a couple of pictures and they came out really amazing. And I was like, oh my god, I love you. How much do you get? And he's like, oh, it's fine.
Come on. Welcome to Troublesome Terps, the podcast that is about as well-behaved as a bull in the china shop. Well, three bulls, actually. Here's bull number one, hailing from the Bavarian hills that are alive with the sound of interpreting, Alexander Gansmeier. Hello, Alex. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you? It's funny. I'm actually a Taurus, so the bull is relatively apt, but I do hope that I behave a little better. So, knock on wood.
That's promising. And over there is bull number two, roaming the rolling hills of Scotland, Jonathan Downey. Hello, Jonathan. How are you today?
Hello, Alex. I'm not quite sure I enjoy being called a bull, but we'll get back to that. And actually, Alexander Gansmeier in maths, a Taurus is just the shape of a donut. So maybe it's a question about the diet of people born in that part of the year.
Okay. Getting into the details already, all right?
Yeah.
My name is Alexander Drexel, and I'm feeling very bullish about today's episode of the Troublesome Terps podcast. Let's walk right into the China shop, or rather, the interpreting booth, because our topic for today, booth manners. And booth manners don't just happen in the booth, so we cover a lot of ground. So maybe, first of all, we start with the interpersonal skills. Of course, a very, very important thing about manners and behavior is being on time, which in terms of interpreting means that you should be on time for your meeting, that you should be in the booth on time and ideally ahead of time. I think that usually the recommendation is to be there about 30 minutes in advance, especially if you are maybe the organizing interpreter, then it should be even earlier. But maybe we all know those colleagues that have a little bit of a problem with being on time and being punctual for various reasons.
Yeah, indeed we do. But I think that generally speaking, the 30-minute rule is kind of universally accepted. So it's kind of, that's what I have in my contracts, but that's also what pretty much every other colleague, at least here in Germany, goes by that I know. So yeah, try to be at least 30 minutes early. I'm usually there a bit earlier because I'm super paranoid about my travel arrangements. So I usually tend to get the earlier tram instead of the later one. And then I'm actually there, turns out, an hour ahead of time. So that's a little, that's a bit awkward as well, but you know.
I really prefer it that way too. I mean, it may be because I'm German, yeah. And we just have to be on time.
So.
Otherwise, we'll feel very, very uncomfortable, even if it's just 5 minutes in advance. We have to be there ahead of time. And I have the same thing about traveling. I'd rather take, you know, a train earlier or a tram earlier, yeah, to make sure I'm really there on time.
Jonathan, is it a German thing? What do you think?
It is a British thing as well, at least it is on the Scottish market. One thing I've noticed, though, is that there tends to be an interpreter rush. So maybe 35, 40 minutes before the event, you'll have maybe one interpreter, and then suddenly you get this massive queue of interpreters trying to get in the room exactly 30 minutes before time. I think realizing that no one's going to shoot us if we're that extra 10 minutes early, and actually the number of times that I've been that little bit earlier and had really fun chats with the technicians that we'll get to later, but you find out so much more if you're the first interpreter there. And I think some of it also allows you to knock down barriers because, let's face it, there are clients who are going to walk into the room 5 minutes before it starts. That's just how they roll, and that's fine. But the time that you sometimes get to get yourself comfortable, to get to the toilet, to find caffeine, and then I know this sounds strange, but to have a chat with the clients can actually do you a lot of good, because you can sit down in a room and go, okay, I already know how this room's going to work. Whereas if we're completely sealed off from them and we go, I'm going in the zone for half an hour, you know, I'm not going to come out until lunchtime, I think we miss a lot of the dynamics when we haven't accidentally on purpose overheard the conversations. So taking that time to get to know the people whose voice we will be for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm. I think there's another bonus for being early, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on, which is you get to choose where you can sit in the booth. And I know that some people are very, very particular about where they want to sit in the booth. Personally, I don't mind. I mean, I really don't care where I sit as long as it's sort of next to an outlet. But I think that's the advantage. Being early also gives you the first dibs on the good seats in the house, as it were.
That being said, I think depending on the colleague that you're working with, even though you might be the one who's early, you still don't get dibs on the seats because you know that they want to sit in that one particular seat. So
that's right. Especially if they're more senior than you. Not necessarily older, but more senior than you. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about one thing, because you touched about talking to clients, and I work in a little bit of a different context, but you usually do that then. You look out for the person that hired you on the site and maybe say hello and talk about a few things, or?
Ideally, I at least like to talk to the organizer. The people organizing the event usually have an awful lot of stuff on, but they'll also, I'm amazed at how keen some of the event organizers that I've talked to have been to give you that little bit of extra information, especially if you're working through an agency. The number of times I've been to jobs and they've said, have they told you about such and such? And usually the answer is no.
Yeah.
and you put their mind at rest and going, you know, I did one event and they said, have they told you the press are going to be here? And I said, no, but that's okay, we'll cope. And it's fine. And they were so relieved that, now the worst thing you can do, and it's, I've only seen it happen on one assignment, is the client says, you know, do you know we're going to have to use relay, or do you know the press are going to come? As an interpreter, you really shouldn't go ghost white and run out of the room. That's bad manners, even if it is incredibly scary.
That's pretty bad.
But I had one event where the client said, do you know such and such a speech has been moved around? And most of the team were like, yeah, big deal, you know, that's, we're conference interpreters. But we did have some people on the team who felt really uncomfortable with the fact that speech 7 was now in position 2. And speech 2, well, that got done 3 days later. Mm. That really upset some interpreters, where I think as professionals, even if we're going to have to go through our bags and change the position of the notes, that's our business to sort that. As far as the clients are concerned, nothing should be a problem.
Yeah, that's true. And as you just said, Jonathan, it's also a good opportunity if you're there on time, where you get to talk to the technicians, talk to the organizers, and maybe run a few tests. It's probably not so necessary if it's a permanent installation, but especially if it's like a mobile booth, you maybe want to be able to test the console, test the microphone. Maybe if it's a console that you've never worked with before, you want to have the opportunity to run a few tests. And also the technicians often want you to maybe say a few words and see if everything works fine. And also if the channels are programmed correctly, because that has happened to us, happens from time to time, that it's the English booth and they set up the French channel.
Yeah, something absolutely. Like
that. Or if you have retool languages, then it's not set up correctly and you want to make sure that gets sorted out before the meeting actually starts.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I do just want to go back very quickly to what Jonathan was saying about talking to the client. Don't argue with the clients.
Unless they say, are you the translator, then you have perfect license to say whatever you want.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know. Do you? I try to be very, very polite about that kind of thing, because I think with at least some interpreters, it's almost a bit like a tick, where you say, as soon as you even start the trans word, then they already, you know, he's got to say wrong. It's interpreter, not translator. And some people are really obsessed with that. And I find that a little bit annoying. I just wonder if clients, of course, I mean, there's always the opportunity to teach them a little bit about the differences, but please be polite about it.
To be honest, at this point in my career, the only time that I would change that is if at the end of the meeting they say, I'd like to thank the translator as well. To me, the automatic thing in my head is, There aren't any translators here. No one's come in pajamas and stroking a cat. It must mean us. Let's change it to interpreters. Yeah. I know some colleagues, when I suggest that, get really annoyed at me, but it's like you're being faithful to what it's, you know, back to the theory of sense, you're being faithful to what the client meant. They meant to thank the funny people in the see-through box. They don't realize that we have a thing about it. Just change it and no one will notice. If they say, are you the translator, I'll just say, yeah, I'm Jonathan, your interpreter for today. Bang, no problem. You don't get into an argument about it.
Exactly. That's a good strategy. Mm-hmm. That I was trying to make that point, yeah. So much for being on time, useful in many ways, as we have seen. And one thing we pointed out is that it allows you to maybe sort out a few things. For example, we had the case where there weren't enough consoles in the booth for all the interpreters that were supposed to be in the booth. But, you know, that gives you enough time to sort that out, especially if you're the organizing interpreter. And we also talked about how it gives you maybe first dibs on where you can sit, because especially if you're working with colleagues that you don't know or that you've never worked with before, it can be a little bit awkward. Not just the question of who sits where and who wants to be where in the booth, but also, you know, the sort of sniffing, if you will, the saying hi and yeah, it's the first time we work together. I always find that very interesting, working with new colleagues, and I wonder how you two feel about that, if you maybe have a strategy or things you say, especially to new colleagues and maybe younger colleagues as well, when it's their first job.
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, especially when you're working with someone who you've never worked with, you don't want to step on anyone's toes in terms of, oh, I'm going to take the right seat, so you have to take the left seat, or, you know, something really insignificant at the end of the day like that. So what I do is, if I'm there early, I just grab a coffee. If by the time I'm finished, they're still not here, I'm just going to sit at a seat in the booth, but not going to set myself up permanently. So, you know, I'll pull out the tablet and just sit there. And then when they come, I'm just going to ask them, so, you know, I didn't know which side you wanted to sit on, so I haven't put down any roots, if you will. And then you just kind of start the conversation with them and see where things go. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I don't do at the start of a job is sniff my booth mate, because that would just be weird. Maybe that only works for Germans. but yeah, when it comes to a new booth mate, I was actually thinking that I've only had three booth mates in my entire career, one of whom I work with regularly and it's fine, and two others I've only worked with once. And I noticed the difference. One of the booth mates that I work with seemed a little bit unsure. It was a highly, highly technical job. Sorry, four booth mates, but one of the booth mates I work with seemed really unsure. And it's actually, at the time, I was quite happy that she said to me, you know, I've prepared for this and I'm a bit unsure, because I prefer that to bravado, to someone coming in saying, yeah, I've got 60 years experience, you know, I've been interpreting since I was 8. Just move over and let an expert do it. I think treating each other with respect, and it's one of the things I've been yammering on about now for 2 months, is being able to be open with each other and say, you know, like my regular booth mate, I will always say to her, if there's a finance talk, can you handle it? And that's fine. And saying to someone, you know, I'm quite happy doing the artsy-fartsy, you know, let's motivate everyone talk, but I know some interpreters who can't stand them. So with a new booth mate, I'm always like, you know, if you get someone trying to motivate people, just send the shift over to me, I'm fine. And I've met other, I did a job with one booth mate, and he says, if they start talking about European directives, just feel free to hand the mic straight over. And I went, great, because that's what I'd be doing anyway. But to kind of be able to get to know each other, be open with your strengths and weaknesses, and just respect each other from the outset. And I think respect to me includes honesty of saying, you know, which one of us are we going to victimize with the finance talk this time?
Fair enough. But guys, before we move on to, I think we're actually already there with the teamwork, but before we really jump into that topic, can I just mention two things real quick? Thank the technician when you're finished, and don't leave your booth a mess, because imagine, I know a lot of colleagues who just like leave their coffee cups and, you know, their candy wrappers and whatever in the booth. And I'm always trying to imagine what they would say if the technician were to leave his duct tape laying around or his screwdriver in the booth. They'd be like, oh my God, look at him. He can't even clean up his own stuff. So every time that I'm at a job and then we're finished, I always make it a point to clean out the booth. And if they don't do it, I'll just be very upfront and say, oh, let me take that for you. I'll clean that up for you, because I just don't want the technician to have to go in there and clean up our stuff after he's set up the stuff and after he has to take it down. So it's just... yeah, so this is just an appeal to everybody listening. Please clean up your stuff.
And it's actually similar here, because in the meeting rooms that we use at the institutions, we have clerks who go around and who distribute documents and who collect everything when the meeting's over. And the German booth actually has a very good reputation, because we always do clean up our act. So we put the documents in one place, so it's easy to put them away. We don't leave all the old half-empty coffee cups around, that kind of thing. So I can really just confirm what you just said, Alex.
Perfect. Big thumbs up.
Jonathan?
I think the only slight exception I would make to that, I mean, obviously you clean away your chocolate wrappers and your coffee cups and your iron brew cans and stuff, but the only slight exception I would make is if you have a multi-day job on the same site, sometimes it's better to leave your term list, if you know they'll be safe, sometimes it's better to leave your paperwork and your term list there on site than to take them away and come back. I had a 2-day job where it made more sense, and also from the standpoint of data protection, to leave the paperwork in a booth in a locked room that we knew we were going to be some of the first people back to the next morning. I think that's okay. Where it's not okay is if, you know, you're leaving the booth after a 1-day job and you've got crisp packets and sweet wrappers and coffee cups, you know, leave the booth at least presentable.
Yeah.
Take the terminology off the blue tack off the walls so that people can actually see in when you're not there.
Yeah.
And I have an additional pro tip here, just to finish this topic off, because what we do when we have a two-day meeting is that we put a little piece of paper on our stack of documents when we leave them there overnight, and we just say, please don't throw away these documents, because otherwise, sometimes you have a very eager cleaning lady or cleaning gentleman who will just take it and throw it away, and it's a shame to lose your notes and your annotated documents and things like that. So maybe just as a little tip, just write it down in the language of the conference venue that they should not take away the documents.
Very good point, yeah.
That brings another question, because I tend to work with a booth mate, and I prefer to work when you have at least one common term list. So you have your own terminology, but we'll all often have the really common terms, we'll have a shared list. But the question then is, when is it okay to pencil in a new term on the list, and when should you just have it down on your own and, you know, show it when you need it? That's something that I think every team's got a slightly different rule. I know some teams with their terminology lists are kind of separated by the Berlin Wall. Whereas I think I would rather, you know, if you're a team, you work together, but it's how you make additions or how you make corrections to the terminology list is actually a really good question.
Yeah, it is.
But I think we have that in the rundown a bit later on. So maybe for now,
okay, that's fine.
Let's just stick to the part on teamwork.
Yep.
And another point that I find interesting always is that we're in such small and confined spaces that it's very interesting to observe the dynamics that are going on, especially in terms of how much space can each individual interpreter take up in the booth. And it's almost a little bit like being on an airplane where you have like three seats next to each other. And there's sort of an unwritten rule that the person in the middle seat gets to use the armrests and that kind of thing. And I think it's almost the same in a booth, unless you're like an asocial interpreter. Usually everyone will make sure that we have sort of equal space for each and everyone in the booth for documents and just personal belongings. Is that something that you observe too?
I think so. I think as well, I mean, Jonathan mentioned it, that he oftentimes works with the same booth mate. And I think that if you do work with the same people again and again, you just kind of develop a rhythm. So I have this one meeting that I always do with this one colleague. It's always the same. And we have, you know, it's probably very German again, but we have the same seats. We each sit on the same chair every single time. We have the same setup, the laptop on the one side, the tablet on the other, the material in the middle, and then a little notepad. And it's always the same. So I think you kind of develop a rhythm. If you don't know the person, I think generally speaking, you just kind of, or I just kind of stick to my side. And I might put a notepad in the middle or some documents and presentations if we have them in print. And then I would usually ask, so how do you want me to help you? Do you want me to help you? Do you want me to take notes? Do you want me to take down numbers, names, or just point at the presentation? And then depending on what the person says, I help or I don't. Because some colleagues will actually say, no, it just distracts me if you take any notes. So please don't do anything. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fine. So whatever works for them works for me.
Yeah, the benefit that I have is having worked with the same colleague for most of my career. We kind of read each other well. I always find it quite uncomfortable when I have a new colleague and you don't know whether... I mean, I have worked with one interpreter who didn't want terminology help. He was just like, you know, I'm going to go for it. And while I was off shift, I might as well have disappeared. I was always trained under the principle that if you're off shift, your job is to make sure that the live interpreter has everything that they need to do a perfect job. That was the schooling that I was trained under.
And that's the default, I think.
Yeah, that's the default. And so things like I don't, unless I really, really need to take a brain break. So like it tends to be what happens in our booth is that you'll do your shift. If it was a particularly tough shift, my boothmate and I, we expect each other to take the next 5 minutes just to kind of take a brain break. But as soon as that's over, there's the kind of unwritten rule that you'll be there to help if something needs done. And we've got, you know, a set of signals and stuff that we use. And to me, that should be the default. And I my definition of a good interpreter is someone who makes the rest of the team look better than they are. But that's something that you have to learn as a team. And there are some interpreters who just get completely put off if they see terms or just have to be in the zone. I think, you know, we're going to be multitasking anyway. We might as well use two brains. And, you know, two brains are always going to be better than one. But it's worth having that chat at the start. And because I'm a gentleman, if I'm working with a lady interpreter, I always give them the seat nearest the door. In fact, there is a rule that we should write down. If your boothmate is pregnant, she gets the seat nearest the door. Every time. You shouldn't need to ask why.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Exactly. And I mean, you just mentioned how important it is to communicate and just talk about these obvious things. I mean, that's what amazes me, that we work in this communication profession, but somehow really fail to communicate properly when it's with our peers. It's the same with, you know, how warm do you want it to be in the booth? Can we turn the fan on? Do we turn it off? How cold should it be? Air condition? And also just taking turns and how long should the shifts be? All those kinds of things are very basic, very normal, just part of the profession. So we can just talk about it, you know, and sort things out before we start.
Yeah. But Alex, I actually have a very interesting question for you, because in the institutions, you guys oftentimes work in booths of more than two, right? Mm-hmm. So I had a job the other day with a fixed booth, three people working there. And I actually discovered that there are unique challenges to a setup with more than two people, because if you want to help, so we did a rota system where I started and then the guy in the middle and then the guy at the left side of the booth. And when the middle colleague was finished, he had to step out to take a bathroom break. And then I guess he also grabbed a coffee or whatever he did. And I wanted to help the colleague on the left, but obviously I was on the far right. So I had to switch seats, put on the headsets of the colleague in the middle so I could hear and help the other colleague. And obviously, after he was finished, it would have been my turn again. So I was stuck in the middle seat because it was a very quick handover. So I was stuck in the middle seat using the headphones in the console of the middle seated colleague. When he came back, he had to take my seat, and it was just a big mess because it was a very fast paced conference. So we couldn't really just, you know, switch everything off and trade places, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm wondering, how do you guys do it? How do you help each other in a three or more people booth?
Well, it wouldn't have occurred to me to really think about it, because three is more or less the standard, at least in the meetings that I work. And just to, as a quick explainer, the number of interpreters per booth is defined in the institutions by the number of languages spoken in a meeting. And obviously, we often have meetings with a high number of languages, up to 20 something. So we just have to have an appropriate number of interpreters to cover all the languages. That's just a quick explainer. But usually it's two or three. And I think if the middle interpreter went on a break because nature called, I think I would just write bigger if I wrote down figures and would just hand them over. I mean, the booths are not exactly huge, so it would still be possible to help the colleagues. So to be honest, I've never really thought about it. It's never really occurred as a problem, I think. But if you're not used to it, then maybe it's different. So I wouldn't feel the need necessarily to change, you know, to move to the other space, to the other chair maybe. And that will be awkward because then a lot of us have their own personal headphones and you can't use somebody else's headphones.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Thank God that was not the case in that situation. It was just the normal over-ear headphones. And the thing was, we both tried to write very big, so the middle guy and myself, but the booth was actually very big because it was a fixed booth, which was very nice. It felt actually bigger than my first apartment here in Munich. That's why I had to switch seats because otherwise he just couldn't have read anything. So, but yeah, it was just the first time that had happened and I was just thinking I could ask. Yeah, so
it may have been that it was because some of the pre-installed or booths that are installed permanently in a building, they can sometimes be very big because maybe they weren't conceived as interpreting booths, but maybe there was something else before, like a technical room or something like that. So maybe they are then too big, which indeed, as you explained, can pose a bit of a problem. Yes, but I think our booths are just the right size, which
like
then
Goldilocks.
Means if there are like four or five people in the booth, which can happen, it becomes very, very cozy, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Is what I love about freelancing is that you have to adapt to what's going on. And I tell you, you know, we're having all this booth manners talk. I did my first job in about 2 years on my own because it was a dialogue interpreting job a few weeks ago. And I really missed, you know, there's a lot of social interaction in the booth and a lot of, you know, I'm uncomfortable and how do we do this? But you really miss having another expert colleague on hand when you have to do a job by yourself and you know if there's a term lookup, you're going to miss it because you're not going to manage to look it up. And I think kind of...
Yeah, you don't have the safety net.
Yeah, exactly. You can't tag team. You can't take a break. I think kind of the basis of all that we're saying, I think, is realize that we are privileged to have colleagues working with us and that we are there to help everyone else look good and we should really be glad that we actually... I'm so glad that in a couple of weeks' time I'm going to have my favourite booth mate back. It's going to make life so much easier. And I'll be a better interpreter for it. So I think it is taking that privilege of... Most of the time we get to work with people who are trained, experienced, know their job and want it to work. That's like light years ahead of a lot of other jobs.
Absolutely. But I do think there's definitely something to be said about working with the same people over and over again because they just know how to... work with you in a booth, not just in terms of the teamwork, the actual pointing out of notes and taking notes, but they also just know how you tick in the booth and, you know, how you can establish a good collaboration. So I think this brings us actually onto our next point where it's all about noise and sound. And I have a couple of colleagues, who have been in the business for a while, and I would find that they are too loud in the booth for me. They might be translating and just, you know, hammering down on their keyboards. So that can be a bit awkward as well. So, you know, I think there's something to be said for that particular teamwork because you just know how the other person ticks and, you know, also how I take my coffee. I find that very pleasant if my colleague brings me back a perfect, nice black coffee with some sugar.
That's the best, yeah. No, but I mean, the whole noise and sound thing is a different and very very important topic in and of itself. So we'll cover that as well. And I think that the first part maybe that we'll have to cover here is just in general mic technique and microphone discipline.
Yeah.
Because even with experienced colleagues, you sometimes find that, okay, they turn on the mic, But, you know, we have these flexible microphones and sometimes they're sort of showing completely different directions. So it's basically impossible for the listener to properly hear the interpreter, which, of course, is not good. Or they, you know, they don't have proper microphone discipline. And it's weird sometimes that people don't pay attention to that. But maybe it's just me. I don't know.
No, it's definitely weird. And I think that it comes at the strangest times. So
the rule that I live by is I'm learning now, I would rather take a tablet than a computer with a keyboard, because you tend to not be able to hear someone tapping on a tablet, or even just using my phone for thermal cups. The more difficult one for me is if I'm in the booth and for some reason I get a sneezing attack or a coughing attack. My number one is, if I possibly can, if I know it's going to last, I'll leave the booth, because you can mute through your own coughing, but if your booth mate doesn't know when you're going to cough, what are you expecting them to do? But I think also it's amazing how loud opening a sweetie can be in the booth. Or like, I've now learned that if I'm drinking tea in the booth, to drink it, to like not even suck, to almost like pour it down my throat and apply no suction whatsoever. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, your booth mates in the middle of doing the financials and all everyone can eat is... I mean, it's just not nice. It's even like simple things like drinking a glass of water. And I'm glad that I did some work in radio before I was an interpreter, because I now understand what sounds really horrible. Like, drinking water is just at the other end, it's nasty. And if you can do it silently, great, and there is a skill to doing it silently. But it's kind of things like that. When it comes to microphone hogging, I've never really had an issue with that. What I have had the issue with is taking a while to learn how to read when your booth mate wants to swap, because oftentimes I'm ready to jump back in and my booth mate's like, you know, you kidding, I can do 10 more minutes of this. And it's learning to get that communication right, where sometimes you're like, you know, sorry, I've had enough of looking terminology for you, I want to jump back in, or you see a good speaker coming up. But learning to put, it's not even putting your booth mate first, it's putting the quality of the job first. And the last thing a client wants to see is a kind of slap fight in the booth over who's going to use who's going to unmute next. You know, come on, we're professionals, we can deal with it professionally. And please let's not have the stopwatch in the booth at exactly 20 minutes you have to stop. What, really? No. Swap at a point that works for your brain, for the content of the talk, and for the client. That's the rules. If you have to get a stopwatch or a watch out, you're really not thinking about the client enough.
No, you're doing it wrong.
But can I just go back to you slurping the tea or not slurping the tea, that is? Because that is actually one of my biggest pet peeves, is when people have water in the booth and then a glass of water and they just pour the water so loudly. I know this sounds really stupid, but this is something that bugs the hell out of me in the booth. Because I either drink from the bottle if it's the small water bottles, because it's just the most silent way to do it. And if you have to pour a glass, don't just, you know, drop the water from like half a meter up, try to tilt the glass and pour it very silently, because it's so annoying, I swear. And also yawning. I have this colleague who, you know, when he's finished, and I mean, it is obviously sometimes a very exhausting job, and then he will just sit there next to me in the booth, and all of a sudden all I'll hear is and I'm like,
that's hilarious.
Can you please stop? I'm trying to work here. So those are my pet peeves. Yeah.
Yeah. Snoring and yawning. Yeah. Which is just terrible. Yeah. And if I think there's a good rule of thumb. If you're not sure whether the microphone will pick it up, just assume the microphone will pick it up.
I want to know, though, how can an interpreter be snoring on the job? Now, I can't understand. The worst would, I guess, be if it's your shift and you snore where your mic is live. That's completely inexcusable. I'm a bit of an interpreting geek, but there's only been like two or three jobs in my entire career where I've sat here going, I have no idea what's going on and I don't get this and I'm bored, like 95% of my jobs, there's been something in the job that I can get into and excited about. And I wonder if that's part of the deal with manners, is that you don't need to worry about manners if you're actually getting into the job. If you're into the job and you're following it and you're kind of sitting in the client's shoes, you don't need all of this stuff. But if, on the other hand, you're sitting there going, yeah, I'm bored, I have no idea what's going on, then you need to think about manners. I think manners are what you fall back on when the job's awful.
Yeah, that's a good point. A good point. Yeah, indeed. There's one thing I wanted to talk about in terms of mic technique and mic discipline, because we've had the case sometimes with our complicated interpreting regimes, which involve relay and retour and so on and so forth, that we were stealing the mic not from our colleague in the same booth, but from the other booth. So in this case, it would have been the German booth. We had the microphone on, we were working, and then it was, say, the Slovak delegate was saying something in Slovak, and the Slovak booth was doing retour into German. And sometimes the systems are set up in a way where they cannot steal your mic. So if you have your mic on, they can't do the retour, you know, and those kinds of intricacies, that can be very difficult. And we've had not necessarily fights, but a few heated discussions between colleagues when that happens. So you want to make sure that you know how the system works and that you know if there's any retour into your language where you just turn the microphone off. And it also, it works the other way around. If you do the retour, then you wait until your target booth has finished working, and then you start doing your stuff, even if you have the feeling, okay, I really have to get started now, just wait and then do it.
Yeah.
And maybe just one question on the whole mute button thing, because there are some interpreters I know are a bit paranoid about the mute button because they think it won't work properly, so they'd rather turn off the mic completely, which I think must be terribly annoying to the listener, because then they get the floor or the original instead of their language, and it can be a different volume. I just think that must be very irritating. Do you have an opinion about that, the mute button versus turning the mic off completely?
I much prefer the mute button because it's simply more convenient for me, because if I take my finger off of it, 9 times out of 10, I don't think I've ever been in a booth where that wasn't the case. But if you take your finger off of it, you're live again. And if I switch it off, you know, you might not hit the button correctly, or I don't know, you miss it, or something stupid might happen, and you're not actually live without realizing it, and you go on and on and on until your colleague gladly points out to you that you're not actually live. So I much prefer the mute button for, you know, that quick word that you need to ask, or that coughing fit that you have, that zip of water that you want. If it's really like a movie or something, like a video clip that they're showing, I usually switch it off, because then they'll also get the actual audio feed from the movie. If we don't interpret it, that is.
I don't, to be honest, some of this is kind of detailed stuff that I don't massively have an opinion on. I think one of the things that I've noticed is that the mute button covers a multitude of sins, and there are times when something will happen that is funny, and it's more professional to just rest your hand on the mute button, have the quick and then go back. But a lot of it to me is just being really, really sensible. I think what's more difficult is if someone goes on to mute and you're not sure if they're going to be able to come back. You know, if someone mutes in a coughing fit and you're like, you know, this has been 15 seconds and you're actually on the floor in blue, we should really turn your mic off. It's that balancing act as to how long do you stay on mute before the clients start thinking that the interpreters have suddenly been overcome by some strange thing. There is a general rule in radio that every second sounds like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good rule for interpreters. It's why things like, you know, you can tell an experienced interpreter that even though we have décalage, you still start within like a second of the first speaker starting, even though you've got décalage, because you know that if you wait that 4 or 5 seconds, by second number 3, all the clients are doing kind of head right round like meerkats. And we know that stuff. I mean, it's really simple things like, you know, do you make sure you turn your mic back on when you come off a break? It sounds really obvious, but the number of times that I've accidentally fallen for, or you're, I know this won't happen in the institutions because you're special, but if you have to go in both directions and you're switching channels, more than once I've hit the wrong channel. And I'm like, it'd be so nice if I was only went in one direction, but you just get used to, you know, press the button, summarize what you missed and get on with it again. It's we're there to recover from that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Faking it. Sorry, resilience. Yes, it's called resilience. It's not called faking it. No.
No, not faking it. Okay. Now, there's a bit of a tricky topic up next, but let's just address it. It's about smells. Some people are very particular about smells, and especially this concerns food, I think. Now, I don't think any one of us would bring a Glasgow curry to the booth or something that in and of itself is already very strong in smell. But I think people have very different taste or very different sensibility in terms of smell. So some people, for example, don't like if you peel a mandarin or an orange in the booth. They can't stand that. Or, do you have anything like that? I'm usually very relaxed about food. I mean, as long as people don't have a three-course meal in their booth and spread out and make a lot of noise with their cutlery, I'm fine. But some people seem to be very sensitive to that.
Can I just say one thing very quickly? It doesn't necessarily have to do with the smell of the food, but something also not to do, and this happened to me as well. I had a colleague who, during his shift, so while he was interpreting, while he was speaking, was eating a tub of potato salad. So the smell didn't really bother me, but it's just the chewing sounds of the potatoes.
The sheer gumption of doing this.
Yeah. I know. But yeah, I'm pretty much like you, Alex. I don't really mind the smell of food. when you have a load of garlic for dinner, it's usually best to have that garlic with your booth mate, so you both kind of
stink.
Yeah, stink. But besides that, I think it's usually fine. I also don't necessarily mind any perfumes or anything really. Mm. If you're a heavy smoker, maybe, I guess that might bother me sometimes. But then again, you're not really sitting on my lap, so, you know.
But you mean just people's breath, not people smoking in the booth.
Well, luckily that doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like maybe 20 or 30 years ago in the institutions, it was still normal behavior to smoke in meetings, and not only the delegates, but also the interpreters. So in some booths, we still have like a small ashtray built into the desk.
Get out.
And there are, of course, wonderful stories circulating around, how the different booths, how much they would smoke and how to recognize that booth. Yeah, that's because that's where all the smoke is and that kind of thing. But
that's amazing.
It's not happening anymore. But I guess, yeah, if you have a heavy smoker who just that's also a question of leaving the booth very often to have a smoke somewhere. Yeah. But it's also a bit of a smell issue, that's true.
I don't particularly have any problems with smells with most things. I think there are the odd perfume, more perfume than aftershave seems to do it. If you get a perfume that really sticks in the back of your throat, thankfully I've never had it, but I have met people where I've been trying to talk to them and the perfume has hit the back of my throat and it's like my vocal cords have become paralyzed. It's really not a good idea to knock out your broodmate's voice. Which, you know, everyone's had that. You kind of walk down the street and you go, okay. Smells don't really bother me too much. It's not really something that I'm particularly worried about, but I have realised that for some reason the rule is if you're on a freelance job, all of the buffet smooth food will either be based on garlic or heavily staining. And I don't know what... I mean, you look at it and you go, it's a sandwich. How much damage can a sandwich do? And then you realise you're an interpreter, you really shouldn't ask that question of a sandwich. But, you know, the slightest thing, like, you know, tuna sandwiches are dangerous. For several reasons, and it's just I'm glad that smells don't bother me, because if they did, I would never be able to eat at any assignment I've ever been to.
Very true.
Just on smoking, have you ever seen somebody vape in a booth, like with these fancy new electronic cigarettes, I guess they are called?
I have, but not during the interpreting, but in the coffee breaks.
Because I think technically it's not illegal, right? You could probably do
it. No, technically you can do it. And to be honest, I really don't mind the smell at all, because depending on what fluid you have in there, it smells really nice. You know, it smells like, I don't know, like apples or peaches or whatever. I've never had somebody do it during the job, but yeah, in the coffee break, or, you know, when the speakers are changing and there's a 5-minute break. Yeah.
Hmm. You guys are making me so, so glad that I have a booth mate that I get on well with. we should actually get her on the show one time just to give like the secrets of how bad my manners are in the booth.
The Troublesome Terps confessional.
we should have Troublesome Terps the booth mates tell all.
Good God.
I really like that.
Kirsty probably has more stories about Alex than he is really comfortable with us knowing about.
Well, Kirsty's actually the one when I was telling the story about the garlic and how you should coordinate your garlic intake with your booth mate. That was Kirsty and I. We both really wanted to have garlic muscles and nobody wanted to say something. And then we both just kind of came out with it and we were so happy and had a lovely, lovely dinner. Yeah.
This is why more interpreters should marry booth mates, because it'd be so much easier.
Probably. Right? Yeah. Probably. Just following up on not technically smell, but we have this note in the rundown, doing nails. And I just wonder, I don't know who put it in there. I just wonder what that person was thinking about. Was it like clipping nails or painting your nails or?
No, it was me. It was actually painting nails because.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
Yeah. And this is super smelly. Yeah. And I know that this is me contradicting myself, but I'm allowed to change my mind. This is a smell that kind of bothers me. So if you're doing your nails, that just, it's just kind of, you know, like industrial paint removers or whatever. It's just not good. But incidentally, that very same colleague did another thing that I had somewhere in our notes. She, while I was interpreting, she started doing some online shoe shopping, which is totally fine. You know, do whatever you want. But then she continuously tapped me on the shoulder and she pointed to the screen and she's like, should I take the red one or the white one or the blue one?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, they're all super nice. Just take them all. I need to work here.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Alex, come on, you were secretly saying, can you order a pair for me as well?
Obviously.
Now, you see, I wouldn't mind my booth mate, because, you know, we're male interpreters, 9 times out of 10 our booth mates are going to be female. I wouldn't mind having my booth mate paint her fingernails in the booth if she started on the toenails.
Yes.
Then I would start complaining.
That's just gross.
You know,
good God.
But I mean, I must admit, I'm pretty sure that my booth mates have seen me bite my nails in the booth because I have to get rid of that bad habit. So, you know, to all of my booth mates, past, present and future, really sorry about that if it annoys you. This is kind of like, you know, this is like going to confessional now, isn't it? It's, you know, all of the bad habits that we've ever seen is going to be the longest podcast ever. And everyone who replies to it is going to say, I'm never sharing a booth with you three guys again.
Right.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, you've got Alex painting his nails, you've got Alex Drexel going shoe shopping.
Eating Glasgow curry.
There's nothing wrong with a Glasgow curry.
No, just not in the
booth.
Just
like an Edinburgh one, only half the price.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so we had online shopping. How do we feel about Facebook or another classic, Solitaire?
That is actually really a classic.
It's still something that people do, but it looks to me like Solitaire is slowly being overtaken by either Clash of Clans or other popular online games or Facebook or insert your social medium of choice here.
Yeah.
Now, what's totally okay is if they listen to Troublesome Terps in the booth, that's absolutely
That's what
fine.
We want, yes.
I honestly, I've never really had that. I've had kind of my booth mate answer emails in the booth and it's like, you know what, fine, because, you know, I know what it's like to run a business. Facebooking would be absolutely fine so long as they're not Facebooking at that time. You won't believe the stupidity that my booth mate is committing. You know, that's... but the related one that I have, and I'm not sure about this, I came across a debate online where interpreters were debating about the ethics of taking a picture of your booth and kind of putting on social media that you were at work now. And I can see, on the one hand, you know, I've never done it, but I do sometimes want to show people that, yes, I do actually do this job sometimes. And, you know, I know what a console looks like. On the other hand, I can totally understand the privacy issues. And I can totally understand, you know, if you're taking a photo of your booth and in the background is the name of the client, that's not very good. Even worse, if the presentation's in the background, it's like, we lost 5 million this year. You know, that's not good. But we are in a social era, and there's part of me thinking, you know, interpreting has to become more visible. People have to know what it is we do. Mm. Otherwise, we won't get people recruiting into the industry. So I think that's, it's kind of halfway between booth manners and social media. Maybe we'll do it on another podcast.
Definitely.
But it is a good question.
Mm, I think you're absolutely right, Jonathan. And I must say, I have been taking those pictures, but when I do it, I try to make sure that I don't take pictures if it's a confidential meeting, obviously. So I would only do it if it's like a web streamed thing anyway, and anybody can join in and see what's going on, because then there's no problem with it. Or I just take a photo of a detail. So, for example, I'm reminded now of a meeting where the presidency was giving out sweets for everyone and also for the interpreter. So I just took a photo of that piece of chocolate or whatever it was in front of the console and shared that. I mean, that was just a mini detail.
Yeah.
But of course, yeah, you use common sense and use good judgment and make sure you don't share something that is not intended to be shared.
Yeah. But I do think that we're actually going to talk about that in a separate podcast. I do agree, though, you know, use your common sense, yeah, obviously. But generally speaking, I don't mind, you know, you can do whatever you want on your laptop as long as you don't hammer away in your keyboard. You can do your emails or Facebook or Twitter, whatever floats your boat. A lot of colleagues, well, not a lot of, but some colleagues also do translations on the side, which,
really?
Yeah, I couldn't. I've never tried it, but I also don't really feel inclined to.
I'm just wondering if they're still able to follow the meeting then, in case they need to help you out with something.
No. I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't know because it's luckily never come up, but they're very much focused on their translation. So I think if I kind of made myself or made them aware of the fact that I needed help at a particular point in time, they would obviously drop everything and help me. But I think when they're doing the translation, this is me just saying it, you know, from my observer's point of view, it looked to me like they were very much focused on the translation, but, you know.
This comes back to, I mean, my training was always, even if you're off shift, you should be following the flow of the meeting. And it's surprising how often, like, you know, a basic term can mean something completely different in a different context. And the meeting could have moved on, and the way you were dealing with it before could be completely different to the way it's going now. I think, you know, unlike translators, I don't think interpreters should really get too hit up about consistency of terminology. Because situations move. I mean, I was doing a fisheries job once, and the word gear, I think we must have had 3 different ways of dealing with it, but you could only know which one was the right one to give your booth mate if you were following the meeting. And to me, that's kind of basic interpreting practice. You know, as I said, you know, at the end of every shift, I'll take like 5 minutes off just to give my brain a break. And then as far as I'm concerned, it's headphones back on,
exactly,
as if I was interpreting. I think that's the least that my booth mate deserves, because if she looks good, I look good. If she looks bad, I look bad too. You're a team.
That's probably a good point to wrap up, actually. That was a very nice a very nice thing to say, that it's really teamwork. So whatever comes out of your booth, it's all of you. And if it's good, then all of you have done a good job. And if it's bad, well, actually, all of you have done a bad job in a way. So that it's very good if we all try to have proper booth manners, proper booth etiquette, and all the things that are related to that we've discussed today. So I hope you found it an interesting discussion. Feel free to comment on the show, give us your feedback on the show, on Twitter or Facebook or wherever you can find us. And we hope to have you around next time. So say goodbye, boys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, boys.